Hey, movie fans, welcome to another episode of the No Way Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about one of the funniest movies with one of the funniest humans around, Mr. Daniel Doney. Most notably, you'll know Daniel from his role of Alex Truelove in the Netflix film Alex Strangelove, as well as the lead role in Netflix's The Package. Look out for him in the upcoming TV miniseries Brand New Cherry Flavor and Sci-Fi's Day of the Dead, where I really hope Daniel gets to turn into a zombie. As always, you can watch this episode's No Way scenes on our Instagram, at No Way Podcast. Now, let's go to the movies. And fans, people of all ages, take a seat, grab a beer. Mr. Daniel Doney is with us.
Oh, you should have said here and it would have rhymed. You were so close to doing like a rhyming thing.
Well, thanks for pointing it out, you dick.
Do you want to redo that, Kayvon, so you can rhyme for everybody?
I stand, but rhymes are for children. This is adult time. Hey, Daniel.
Hey.
Do you have your own intro? They don't like mine.
I don't, no, yours was good. I'm happy about that.
So, I actually am so excited. I was thinking about, I've been thinking about you a lot. No, I was thinking about you today that we were going to be recording, but I thought about you because I went and played, my first game of tennis in like forever. And nice. That's one of the things that you and I have done together, played a game of tennis. Are you still playing?
Yep. I played today.
You also played today?
I did.
I'll also insert myself here. Daniel and I also play together sometimes. So Mike is the only one here that doesn't play tennis.
Former tennis player. I'd like to leave on top with my career.
Oh, you're retired. Okay.
I'm retired, guys. I beat the kid from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. He had so many layers of clothes on when we played, and every rally he took one more layer off. It's kind of, looking back, that's kind of weird, actually.
Strip poker
tennis. But I beat him, and I left it at that.
And I'm sure everybody listening will be curious. And just to clear the air here, Daniel is the best player out of us three.
Daniel beat you?
That's right.
Mark, he can beat me. Yes, of course he can. Oh. Yes. He's got a really good serve that.
What's your weak? Are you weak on the backhand? Where's your weakness?
My weakness?
Backhand?
No, I got a good backhand.
Backhand, he does. Yeah.
It's the ladies. Yeah. That's his weakness right there.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the ladies in the stands. Distracting me.
All the fans watching.
Distracting me.
Well, let's jump right towards what we're doing here, bud. Daniel, would you mind telling us what movie you've brought to the show today?
Sure. Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. This is really fun. Podcasts are fun.
No one's doing them.
Listen to ourselves. No one's doing them these days. We're bringing them back. we're talking about Princess Bride.
My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Do you have a particular memory or even do you remember the first time you ever saw it?
No, not really. I think I get kind of that nostalgia feeling when I hear the soundtrack. And that kind of brings me back, you know, that kind of smell memory sense when you kind of go back in time.
When you smell the VHS container.
Yeah, you smell that VHS. You can smell the
pop of the plastic.
The pop of the plastic, the clean energy of Blockbuster. I definitely rented it from Blockbuster, though. Yeah, first time I saw it, definite Blockbuster.
Do you think if I put three different movies in front of you from your childhood, you could tell which one's which just by smell?
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Sure. I'd love to
100%.
I'd love to try. Yeah, let's do a little Gordon Ramsay.
This is a Die Hard 2. Die Harder.
A little bit of Cheeto, a little bit of Cheeto dust on
that
VHS.
These all Die Hard. These are all three of these Die Hard?
Oh, you try to throw me for a loop here. This is a head cleaner tape. It's not even a movie.
Oh man. I forgot about those.
Inconceivable.
I didn't see it as a kid. It wasn't a movie that my parents showed me. It's one that I kind of discovered as an adolescent and then a little probably closer to 17, 18. When you were watching it as a kid, maybe this is for everybody, but Daniel first, did you think it was funny or did you get the jokes, the tone? It's such an odd film.
Fencing, fighting, torture, revenge, giants, monsters?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think I thought it was that funny when I saw it, to be honest. I don't remember getting the jokes that much. Like, I think I probably knew that it was funny, and watching like the Billy Crystal scene, I was like, oh yeah, Billy Crystal, he's funny. I get it. It's funny. I watched it yesterday and today because I was bored today, and I was like, well, I'll watch it again. And it makes me laugh way more now than it did back then. It's way funnier, and which surprised me. I was like, I don't think this is going to be as funny, but it was way funnier than I remembered.
You have six fingers on your right hand.
This was the first time I've ever watched it full through.
Inconceivable!
It just wasn't one of those movies that I ever watched as a kid. I had seen little bits of it, and it's actually like Lauren loves this movie, and she has been harping on me for years. And before we met, and I think like as like an adult.
The harping is unrelated to the movie. She's
yeah,
just been
no, she's
harping
just been, she's
on
just
him
on
for
me.
She's years.
Just on me.
She's actually just off camera, ugh. Just...
Liar!
Get back, witch!
I'm not a witch, I'm your wife!
Does this exist for any of you that you've lied about seeing a movie before to somebody?
Oh, 100%.
This is like my top one that I've lied about seeing, and every time I, like, somebody's like, have you seen Princess Bride? And I'm like, of course I've seen Princess Bride.
Liar!
Mine has always been Labyrinth.
Oh.
I still... I'm very shaky if I've seen that movie, but every time someone brings it up, I always go, yeah, Bowie, yeah. Right? I don't know.
Kayvon, I'm the exact same as you. Because I've seen parts of that movie, and like, yeah, I like movies like that. I love The Dark Crystal. Oh, have you seen Labyrinth?
Yeah.
Liar!
Princess Bride was released on September 27th, 1987. It runs for 98 minutes. It's written by William Goldman, and it's based on his own novel of the same name, Princess Bride. It is directed by Rob Reiner. The Princess Bride was also nominated for an Oscar. So this is the first one of our movies that we've had nominated for an Oscar on this show.
Most prestigious. Thank you very
much. Yes, thank you. Can anybody take a guess of what category it is? Because it's a bit hard, actually. It's just for best original song.
Oh, I was gonna guess that.
Were you gonna guess that one?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The one in the credits. The storybook. My love is like a storybook.
My love is like
storybook love.
I think it's like best original score, but
I think it kind of slaps. But anyways,
my love is like a storybook. But it's as real as the
Princess Bride was released by 20th Century Fox. It had a budget of $16 million and it grossed $31 million worldwide. It didn't do that great. It stars Robin Wright as the Princess Bride, Cary Elwes as Wesley, Mandy Patinkin as Inigo Montoya, Chris Sarandon as Prince Humperdinck, Christopher Guest as Count Rugen, Wallace Shawn as Vizzini, and Andre the Giant as Fezzik, and also has Billy Crystal as, I didn't write it down. So.
Miracle Max,
thank you, gosh.
And I'd like to shout out Carol Kane as Valerie, his wife, and I love Carol Kane.
Coming.
While homesick in bed, a young boy's grandfather reads him the story of a farm boy turned pirate who encounters numerous obstacles, enemies, and allies in his quest to be reunited with his true love.
But that's not what he said. He distinctly said to blave.
Here's some fun facts for you.
Strap in. Fun. Here comes some fun.
I thought this one was really sweet. And
they're called fun facts, Mark, and not sweet facts.
Oh, shoot. Okay, scrap this first one then. Ignore it if you want fun facts. When asked about his favorite thing about making this film, Andre the Giant replied... So somebody asked him, what's your favorite thing? And without skipping a beat, he said, nobody looks at me. He felt treated as an equal without people staring at him because of his grand size. He had a really, really nice, sweet time with this movie.
Mm.
And I don't know. I just, that one hit home for me.
That's
because,
nice.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Has anybody seen Andre, the documentary?
Yeah, here? It's amazing.
Yeah.
So my fault being the biggest and the strongest.
You know what? I've never seen it. I totally lied. I totally lied.
I
just lied.
Yeah, yeah.
Liar!
reviews. It's got 97% on the tomato meter, and it got 3.5 stars from Roger Ebert out of a possible 4. And this is what he said. It is filled with good-hearted fun, with performances by actors who seem to be smacking their lips, and by a certain true innocence that survives all of Reiner's satire. Part of the secret is that Reiner never stays with the same laugh very long. There are a lot of people for his characters to meet as they make their way along the journey, and most of them are completely off the wall.
Unemployed in Greenland!
Okay, Daniel, we have a part here where we call it the elevator pitch, and essentially the whole premise is that we, as the hosts, are Hollywood execs. We have the money, you have the idea. Pitch to us this movie as if it's your idea and you want it to get made.
All right. Okay, listen up, boys. Let me tell you a tale. You like fantasy, right? You like fantasy. Everybody likes a story, huh? Everybody likes a story. This is the most classic tale you've ever heard. You got a princess, you got a hero, you got a bad guy. But guess what? It's kind of a spoof and a satire, and it's funny, and it's weird, and it kind of throws everything on its head. And look, it's the 80s. Fellas, it's the 80s. fucking Reagan's yeah. Ruling us. Did I mention it's a fantasy movie? Wallace Shawn has agreed to be in it.
Oh, I love Wallace. My dinner with
Shawn. Yeah, he's in it.
Started
and
with
he's
that.
He's going to be really funny. He's going to be really funny. There's sword fighting in it. We got a giant. That's it.
Wow.
Well,
sold. And I actually immediately got the image when you said, this is the 80s, boys, that our table is covered in cocaine. We're just ripping.
Like, covered in cocaine.
What you do not smell is called iocane powder.
Who's your favorite character? What's your favorite quote?
I'll go first. My favorite character watching for the first time is Andre the Giant's Fezzik. And the favorite one was Wallace Shawn when he's like, are you going to be rhyming everything? And he says, anybody want a nut?
No.
Oh, you fucking biffed it hard,
says,
bud.
I was like, don't take the line that we're all going to say.
I know, that was my quote, and you shit the bed.
It was my quote, too.
Anybody want a peanut?
Anybody
who hasn't seen Markian's it. We like, all know Markian has not seen
it. Oh,
the movie.
My God.
Would anyone like to snack on a pecan? That great
oh,
kind
my
is?
God.
Is anybody hungry right now? I have walnuts. Yeah.
What do you do with a macadamia?
Macadamias. Yeah, macadamia.
Fucking. My name is Inigo Motorola. My daddy's dead, and it's your fault, is what his line is, right? I'm pretty sure that's the exact line.
Is that your favorite character in quote, Mike?
Yes. I think my favorite character is Inigo Montoya, though.
I promise I will not kill you until you reach the top.
Obviously, Andre's my favorite. But I think my favorite line is from The Priest, which is marriage.
Marriage is what brings us together.
My favorite character is Vizzini, Wallace Shawn's character. He's the ultimate funny, angry, screaming character. And I don't know, favorite line? Yeah, just never go against a Sicilian when death is on the
That's
line. That's
good.
Thing.
Never go in against a Sicilian when death is on the line.
Before we step into the No Way rounds, we need to establish some givens for the Princess Bride. These are the things that we accept and establish as rules of the world and will not factor into our debate this evening or into our questioning of the Princess Bride. First given is the container, which is the Peter Falk Columbo reading to Fred Savage Wonder Years. There's this container that holds the Princess Bride, is that we are being given this story via Gramps to a sick kid. We're just saying that we're not questioning the container. We're just looking at the Princess Bride purely.
As you wish.
The second given is to do with the machine. That is the torture device that lives underneath the pit of despair. We are not going to pull apart or question how that thing works.
Suction.
Yeah, sure. We're just accepting that they designed a really great torture machine, and that stands as a given. And the third and final given are that masks are very effective. Wesley shows up in one of those classic half mask, nose up, and like Batman or many other superheroes, nobody seems to recognize him, his voice, even his eyes, very close up.
I know who you are. You're the Dread Pirate Roberts, admit it.
Anybody want the macadamia?
Anybody want the...
Oh, God, I'll never live that one down. Holy macaroni.
Let's fucking jump into round one for Princess Bride.
Round one.
And that's me. All right, so stepping into our first round of No Ways, I'm going to be taking the lead on this one. We're going to be going to about 7 minutes 30 seconds into the film where we're going to watch the scene where Buttercup is kidnapped on her horse by the famous trio. So we're just going to jump to that scene if you're following along with us.
There is nothing nearby, not for miles.
Then there will be no one to hear you scream.
Okay, so what we just saw there is Princess Buttercup was grabbed off her horse by Andre the Giant, and now they are loading up a boat, and they've set off the horse to mislead the people of Florin that this was a job by Gilder.
It's fabric from the uniform of an army officer of Gilder.
Who is Gilder?
And I'm just going to jump us to another scene, not too far ahead, just to 10 minutes and 12 seconds, where we are going to see them now at sea later that night, and they've discovered that somebody is trailing them.
No one in Gilder knows what we've done, and no one in Florin could have gotten here so fast. Out of curiosity, why do you ask?
No reason. Suddenly, I just happened to look behind us and something is there.
Okay, what are we getting at here? What are we getting at here? What's going on here, Cavon?
Boats are real.
What kind of trails are you leaving here?
My no way is that Wesley does not intercept them at shore before going to sea. I don't think that he would let them leave the shore in that boat before intercepting them. And here's my thinking of why. The only way that Wesley is going to be able to know to follow is if he had been observing from afar when she was grabbed. So he's the only one who has a trail on her. So he would have had to have been observing from a distance her grab from that horse. And so if his whole goal is just to get these guys to let her go, my no way is that he even let them leave the shore.
I'm thinking this. I'm thinking he's like, I was thinking about this too, Kayvon. I'm thinking he observes the Florin royal grounds from afar, and he notices that that Princess Buttercup rides on certain days. And he's like, okay, she rides on Thursdays. On Thursday, I'm going to go out and I'm going to meet her. Bad luck. That Thursday just happens to be the day that she gets captured. So while he's coming up to meet her in the forest, they get there first, and they capture her.
We are but poor, lost circus performers.
So he's just a little bit late, I guess, is what I'm saying.
But wouldn't he come in and like intercept right before they get onto the boat? Would that not be a better place to? He runs some risk if he lets them get away a little bit. No.
Here's my thinking. I want to fill in a little other piece of this that's not provided to us in the film, but I think that we can interpret it from how the characters describe, you know, their feelings, is that she thinks he's dead and she gets engaged to Humperdinck, and he becomes a pirate surviving the ordeal. And my assumption is once he feels safe, he comes back home to find Buttercup. Buttercup? She's not at the farm. Where's Buttercup? Oh, she's engaged to Prince Humperdinck. Wesley feels deeply betrayed because she said she would stay faithful, and he later on gets very upset about it and blah, blah, blah.
Where I come from, there are penalties when a woman lies.
So what's he doing now? He's not walking up to her right away and going like, hey, I'm alive, I'm home, what's the deal? He's clearly sitting back. He's waiting to find out if this deceit is real or not. He's sitting back and observing. He sees her get grabbed. He obviously sees them go to the shore to a boat because he's the next thing we see on a boat behind them. So he knows they're in a boat. My issue is if he's going to intercept anyways, why does he let them launch?
I think he's at sea witnessing all this. He's a pirate. He's in his boat. pirates like to stay on their boat. They get their telescopes out. They look at the stuff going on land before they make a decision on land. So he is at sea when he's witnessing this. So they're at the dock. If he comes into that dock, he's going to be docking on their dock. And that's a whole cluster dock going on.
He's cluster docks, cluster docks.
You can't have cluster docks. So he's already at sea. He sees their boat go away. Oh, shit. Closes up the telescope. He's got to follow them now because
He goes after her because she gets kidnapped. Because he's been chilling around there for a while, just kind of stewing about it. He's been making a stew.
Yeah.
Oh, Buttercup, she betrayed me. What do I do? And then she gets kidnapped and he's like, well, I got to do something.
I do agree, though, with that. I think he has to be on land because he followed her by horse to this location. Like, I don't think that he just happened to be on sea and he's like, what? Oh, there she is.
No, but I'm
with
Daniel.
Gosh.
He watches her ride her horse on Thursdays and he found a nice vantage point from the water to do it because that's more sneaky.
But do you think she goes the same route every Thursday?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think she does the same route.
It's a great route.
Come on, you saw the first scene. She gets the wood chopped on the same day. She always needs the pot picked up from the farm in the same morning. She's a creature of habit.
Farm boy, polish my horse's saddle.
I don't see any water near the area where she gets grabbed.
That's true.
She's in a forest.
We don't see that.
Oh, isn't it right next to the water?
Isn't it right next to the boat?
I'm looking at the shot right now. I'm looking at the shot right now. There's no water in the area. She's right in the middle of a forest path.
We're talking about true love here. Wesley wants to make that true love spark. He knows how to make that true love spark. So he's waiting for the best opportune moment. You know, he could swashbuckle his way into Prince Humperdinck's castle at any moment, but he's waiting and that's the moment. He's like, this is it.
Yeah. Well, actually, okay, to go with that, I also think that I'm not entirely agreeing with you, Daniel, but I'm cluster docking with you a little bit here.
Yeah, dock. We'll dock. We'll put your dock on my dock
for this idea. It's that this is an inopportune moment to do it because there's three people and we know he can take them out one by one. But I think also he's like, okay, she got captured, but there are three people there. I can fight one of them off. I could maybe outsmart one of them one-on-one.
One of them's a giant.
I can't deal with them all together at once, but I also can't lose sight of her. So my best bet is I just got to follow. I got to follow until a better opportunity comes.
I mean, I'm going to offer another way here and to keep on docking with you, Mike.
Let's dock. Let's triple dock.
Triple dock.
Let's triple dock here. If he's a pirate, which he is, and he's watching this go down. He's a dread pirate. Yeah, for a minute. Okay, so he sees he sees three guys on land. He's like, I don't probably stand a chance against three, but on the water, I bet I could take them because I am a dread pirate. So you know what? I am going to intercept them on the water because that is actually the best place I stand a chance to win this battle because I'm so experienced on the water. These guys probably aren't.
These are some landlubbers. These are some fucking landlubbers.
Yeah, and he's a sea lover, and I think it's like, I'm going to get him on the ship, and then you'd get the princess on your ship, and then you could sail away, and that's
actually pretty great. So you think he goes, actually, I'm more qualified to take them at sea than I am at land, because, well, look at the size of that fucker.
I just want you to feel you're doing well.
If he's such a great pirate, he never catches them.
That is true. That is true.
I wonder if he's using the same wind we are using.
Whoever he is, he's too late.
It just comes down to the rule of the podcast where we try to find the no way in that the answer can't be, well, the writers and the screenplay people wanted to just elongate this entire chase process. That's not a good enough reason. It has to stick with the character's motivations and what the smartest thing and what we think he would do in that moment, which I think would be to intercept them right there, finish that fight, take him on, he'll win, he's the best. And then he's got the girl, then he can do the rest as he does later.
I agree that it doesn't really make sense, but I think that he has this kind of flair for drama and this kind of true love's touch that he's looking for the most dramatic way to win her back. And that's the best way to get her back is to defeat, you know, the three trials and then get her back. It kind of sticks it in her face that he did all this stuff for her and she's just sitting there annoyed that she's going to marry Humperdinck. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think what you're saying actually does strike a little bit of a chord in that, like, for him to just basically capture her on his own at some point is also not as interesting. Well, she doesn't deserve it. And also, like, how good does it make him look if he's like, I didn't kidnap you. I saved you from being kidnapped. You know, he wants her to get kidnapped first so that he can save her from being kidnapped.
I'm not saying that. Yes. He witnesses her get kidnapped. We see that happen because he was still like seeing her from a distance. He wasn't even maybe going to talk to her yet. He just was watching her. He sees her get kidnapped by those guys. And he's like,
great. In his head, he's like, fucking perfect. Great.
Why is he fucking perfect? It would be like, oh no, she's in danger. I'm going to go intercept them before they get on this boat and get away. And then I have to go get my boat. And then we got to go on a chase. Just deal with it right there as soon as you see it happen. Why not just deal with it as soon as you see it happen?
No, because I don't know, man. I don't know. How much more romantic is it to give someone an umbrella when it's raining than like the day before to be like, I bought you an umbrella in case it rains? It's like, he's coming in.
Yeah. Have you ever done that?
Don't think too much about what I just said. It's really specific.
Yeah, it's a classic move. You give somebody a pint of your blood and you go, you never know.
You never know.
You're going to need this. Keep this pint of blood. Don't drink it.
The way argument on this is that he is allowing her to stay at risk longer.
Yes.
And he's even risking that she dies because she almost does with those eels.
He
doesn't even know what they're going to do to her on the boat. He takes that risk because he thinks there's a more dramatic gesture and moment to be earned if he drags this out.
Yes.
Mike and Daniel, you saw the love of your life get kidnapped, say on Granville Street. They're taking their time wrestling with her as she's getting put into a car. Are you going to say, you know what, I'm going to be a little more dramatic here. I'm going to let them drive away first. Or you could just intercept them right there as you're watching them stuff her into the trunk and you could deal with it there, but you're going to let them get a nice half an hour head start on you just to be dramatic.
If I'm me, no, I'd piss my pants and call the police. But if I'm the Dread Pirate Roberts, oh yeah, I'd let him go and then I'd call them and be like, what's up, motherfuckers? I'm coming for you.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
I drive in on a motorcycle. The motorcycle would go in through the window.
Motorcycle kind of looks like a pirate ship.
It would explode. Yeah, the motorcycle looks like a pirate ship. Exactly. It's got a sail.
I'm still no way.
Okay. Mark Ian's staying at no
I'm
way.
Staying.
Mike, I have a feeling that you got swayed.
Yeah, I like the narrative. It makes sense that his whole thing is like, it makes sense to me that if he wants to win his true love back, and also he thinks that she's engaged to someone right now. So it's not just getting her, it's also getting her back, like making her choose him over Prince Humperdinck. I think that it fits his justification to make it something special. I'm away.
And Daniel, final lap here. Are you? I mean, you swayed Mike over, so I got a good feeling where you might land.
Yeah, I'm so fucking easy, though, Daniel.
I just gotta say, this is really fun. This is fun. I'm having a good time. I'm impressed by intellectually, I think no way. Like, I'm impressed by you pointing that out because you are right. It doesn't really make sense, but just in terms of the dramatic flair of the film, I gotta say, way. I think it doesn't bother me. It doesn't grate me.
Okay, I'm fighting actually a little bit here.
So what happens now?
We face each other as God intended. Sportsmanlike.
Do you think, because it's not about the purpose of the film or what the film needs. We're talking about the logic of the characters and the given circumstances we've been offered. Does it line up with Wesley? Does this action of risking her further at sea line up with the Wesley character that we're dealing with?
Yeah.
I'll have it your way.
Life finds a way.
I'm gonna say you guys got the way on that one. I lose my no way. I completely disagree. But the only thing that if your way works and we stand by it, what I think it does, which I don't like, is it lessens their true love.
Oh, their true love is terrible.
What?
I want to see the remake where Daniel pisses his pants and calls 911.
Gets on a motorcycle.
I don't know where they went. They took. Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh my god! There's so much pee. It's a fall. And it's it's the Princess Bride. Have you seen the Princess Bride?
Sir, did you just let them get away?
Yeah, because it's a Vesuvian. I'm not left-handed.
I'm not left-handed either.
Okay, round one goes way. Markian, you got second go here.
Round two.
Get ready. Okay, I'm going to introduce my No Way, number two here. So basically, it's a really, really easy setup.
I thought you were going to say it's an easy No Way. It's a soup. Like, I'm
this
fucked.
One's, guys,
so
this one's
easy.
So
this is easy. Let's just call it right now.
It's done. This one's dumb.
Oh, man. Okay, so the setup is easy. It's just the Dread Pirate. Wesley is going after the guys, as we've just been talking about. They get up the cliffs of insanity. He takes down... Inigo Montoya.
No, let him really commit to it. I want to hear what comes out
he
of it.
He goes after Macadamian, and then they finish that fight. And he finishes Andre, finishes I get all these characters mixed up in my head.
I'm just going to help you a little bit. He beats the first two guys and he's catching up to the third.
I love how he said this was an easy setup and it's like not at all.
I am lost.
Does anybody want a Brazil nut?
I'm done. Lost.
Okay, so Wesley catches up to Vizzini and we're going to watch the clip.
You're that smart.
Let me put it this way. Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes.
Morons.
No Way, Vizzini sets up a charcuterie style lunch while on the run with Buttercup. It's that simple. I just don't think that Vizzini is going to take the time while being pursued to set up a nice little lunch for both of them, including wine, bread. We got the apples there. He put a nice little thing over the rock, the cheese, little tablecloth.
There's apples?
Oh, there is.
Three
some apples.
It's a lovely Mediterranean style lunch.
Very Sicilian.
So that's my No Way.
I mean, he's got bread, cheese, and apples, and a bottle of wine. Where I don't remember him carrying a bag of any sorts earlier. Where did he get that stuff? I don't know.
I have a really strong way. On this one, I'm going to be now the other voice, because you guys blew it on the first one, but I'm going to jump in here.
You'd like to think that, wouldn't you?
You know, you were right, Kayvon. You were right. I agree that you are right, but something about it, Like I said, I agree with you, but just for something about it, I couldn't.
I just won't let you have it. Okay.
Why do you do this?
So this one, though, I am a hard way because here's what I think's going on. I think that he believes that Andre the Giant succeeded in destroying him.
Wow.
And when he sat down to eat lunch, he wasn't expecting him to show up. And so he all of a sudden hears this running coming up the hill. He looks over his shoulder. Holy shit. It's the guy in the black hood, and he pivots around the table, puts a knife to her throat, and he got kind of stuck with his pants down.
Oh, shit. I've never thought about that. How many apples are there? Three?
Are three.
He's got just enough apples.
Three apples. Some bread and some cheese.
Well, don't I look silly now, Kayvon? Somebody else say something. I need to think about how to fight this one.
Inconceivable.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
I bet that's some good cheese. That's some old cheese.
It looks like it's got that
I bet
skin.
Vizzini has some good cheese. And that wine, an intellectual like Vizzini's got some good wine and cheese.
Song.
They pair well.
He just said he's the smartest person he's ever known and that exists, yeah. Right? If I'm a very, very smart person, I see that this Wesley, this masked man, is very, very impressive. Okay. He beats Inigo. Okay, that I wasn't expecting. Wow, this guy's better than I thought. So I'm going to leave the giant now to take him on. If I'm that smart, I would also be like, this guy can actually run around the giant pretty easily and could outrun. Andre can, you know, barely walk. Mm-hmm. So if I'm leaving him and if push comes to shove, if Wesley is like, I can't beat this guy physically, I'm just going to run around him and go intercept.
You don't think that Vizzini would think, okay, I've left the giant, but this guy could run around him.
Yes.
I shouldn't stop.
Yes. That threat is still real. I don't know if Fezzik is going to beat him. You're that smart. You're not putting all your chips.
Because he's so smart, he knows this. If the guy in the black hood runs around his giant, he's fucked either way.
I can't compete with you physically.
He says that. I can't. We're at an impasse. I can't beat you physically. I can't beat you with a sword. So if he runs around as giant or not, he's...
Why are we set... Yeah, which comes back to the original No Way. Why have we set up this entire lunch?
Might as well have lunch.
Okay, I like Kayvon's idea that he's overconfidence is a part of his personality. We see it on the boat when he's like, no one could follow us. Inconceivable is his like mantra. It's inconceivable that something could go wrong.
And you're no match for my brain.
So I do think there's a lot to be said that this is not a lunch set up for his interaction with Wesley. This is a lunch set up for his interaction with the giant and maybe even an ego if he comes back. He's like, there's no way, it's inconceivable that this guy is going to get past my giant. And you know what I gotta do when my giant does a lot of boulder throwing? He gets hungry and I gotta feed my big boy.
I'm just going to have to find myself a new giant, that's all.
Don't say that, Vincini.
And I gotta give him some apples, I gotta give him some cheese, I gotta give him some wine. I think he's set up for that. And I think you're absolutely right, Kevin. I think he's caught off guard when Wesley does show up. But this is Vizzini, and once he is caught off guard, he's not going to show it. He's not going to show it. He's immediately going to go, this is all a part of my plan to have cheese and wine out, and, let's figure it out from here. I think it's a way. I think it's set up for the giant to eat.
Now, do we think that the Princess Bride set up this lunch, or if was that Vizzini?
I mean, you got to feed your hostage.
It's Vizzini. She's blindfolded and bound.
Yeah. She's blindfolded and bound when this happens. Okay.
Yeah, she's and bound she's just a farm. And also,
she's just a farm girl at heart. Do you think she knows these cheeses, this wine, this bread that Daniel was mentioning? She doesn't have the taste for this.
I'm not saying that. I just was like, can't she just run away while he's setting up his elaborate lunch?
She's all tied up and she can't see. What I hear is two sides of this, and I go away on either end. My first instinct is that he is a man who keeps saying inconceivable at every juncture. His confidence, based off his mind and his beliefs that he can succeed, is a bit blown out. And so he leaves his giant, and the idea that his giant would fail is inconceivable. So he, I think, is waiting for his giant, yeah. And he's having lunch, and they've been traveling by foot, and he has to eat. And they have to, like, otherwise they're going to make it. And he gets caught off guard. Or, I also still think this is a way, he realizes there's a possibility his giant might fail or Wesley runs around him. Either way, he's not going to be able to get away on foot.
Just runs around him.
That was your suggestion, was that Wesley just did a lap around Andre.
It's true.
Either way,
keep a large perimeter around him and he's done.
He says, we're at an impasse because I won't be able to get away from you and I can't beat you physically. So either way... It makes no difference.
It's lunchtime. Either way, it's lunchtime.
Either way, it doesn't make a difference if he stops for lunch. So I'm away.
Do we know what time it is? Can anyone tell by where the sun is in this scene?
High noon.
So it's lunchtime. It is lunchtime.
Low noon.
I'm away. I said he's hungry. He's got to feed his giant.
I'm away because I think he set this up beforehand. And I think he's setting it up for an intellectual battle with Wesley.
Life finds a way.
But, you know, but again, I still kind of agree that it doesn't really make sense why he has all this.
Oh, God, gee.
Boo! Boo!
I mean...
It's like, I love the fact that you're like, listen, for the point of the podcast, I completely disagree with myself, but I just like the movie too much to say it. It's like...
Yeah.
I vote with my heart.
As you wish.
Well, either way, so we are two ways with one remaining, which means this is a traditional place where we now go all or nothing in the third round. Daniel, you're a gambling man. You ready to make this last round for all the chips?
Yeah, I'm a huge gambler, so definitely let's go all the way.
What's your game? What's your gambling game?
If I'm going to the casino?
Yeah.
I'm doing the roulette table.
Oh, I was hoping you'd say that. I love roulette.
And I'm going black or red, all on black or red. Because I like that kind of 50-50 chance, even though it's not quite those odds.
It's very exciting.
Always hits double zero when you do that.
You don't. You're not one of those people who like cover the entire board with chips, and you're like,
I don't understand how that works.
I've started to become
advanced
that person.
Mathematics. That's advanced mathematics.
I've tried to walk up to that table so many times, and I have what Daniel's reaction to watching his partner get put in a trunk is. I pee myself and I run away. I am so intimidated by the roulette table. And I'm on the phone with the police, and they're like, "This really isn't our jurisdiction." I'm like, "Yeah, but there were so many chips and so many chips.
My money."
Round three.
My final No Way. We're gonna be heading to watch this scene to about an hour and 18 minutes into it, and we're about to see. Let's just watch the movie together, guys. At this point, Princess Buttercup has been taken back by Prince Humperdinck. She's back at the castle. Wesley has been thrown into the pit of despair. He's escaped the pit of despair. He's reunited with Inigo and Fezzik, and they're about to storm the castle. And going on inside, we have a beautiful marriage taking place between Prince Humperdinck and Princess Buttercup. And we're going to watch that scene right now.
Have you the wing?
Here comes my Wesley now.
So now we're going to jump ahead just a little bit. That's kind of the main thing we need to see from that scene. We're going to head to an hour and 22 minutes and about 48 seconds. The wedding is now over. Princess Buttercup is being escorted to her room as Wesley and the boys' raid of the castle continues.
What was that for?
Because you've always been so kind to me. And I won't be seeing you again since I'm killing myself once we reach the honeymoon suite.
What was that end part? Why was that important?
Because
I'm curious.
Princess Buttercup mentions that she's going to go to her room and kill herself. And my No Way is that there is no way that in that moment, Princess Buttercup has resigned herself to suicide. She clearly just said, "That's my Wesley coming to save me." Earlier on, when she finds Wesley for the first time again at the bottom of the hill, she says, "I'll never doubt you again.
I'll never doubt again."
So to me, it does not check out one bit that she just suddenly, while knowing Wesley is outside, about to save her, decides to end her life. To me, that's the idea of being like you're in a burning house, you hear the firemen outside, you're like, "They're coming to save me." And then a second later, you're like, "But I guess I'll just die instead." Like, she knows he's coming in to save her. There's no way that she resigns herself to suicide in that moment.
I kind of agree. That makes sense.
Which means he will
vote the opposite.
But he does agree.
Mike, that makes perfect sense.
She says, "I'll never doubt again."
And then she doubts. Then she doubts. Doubts in a big way.
"I have such doubts." Yeah, that's strange. It is strange. I never thought about that. You guys are good. These are all things I didn't notice.
It's just, I don't understand why she's so reserved to the fact that she has to now go resigned. Thank you.
Rosé'd.
Anybody want a nice rosé?
You know Vizzini does.
Do you think that's a rosé that he pours?
That's definitely
rose. It's a brosé. It's when you take the white and the red at a wedding and you just mix them together.
Is that a term or did you just make that up?
My friend taught me that.
Inconceivable.
I'm gonna swoop in here and prove it away.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I have a way in my head. Let's see if
You are dealing with a medieval feudal system. And you are living under religious rule. The church is very powerful. She believes she's married under God's eyes and law at this juncture.
She does think she just got married. Yeah. That's true. Yeah, she thinks it's over. She's like, "Fuck, I just got married."
There's no divorce. She can't leave the Prince Humperdinck now. And what happens in that scene following? She's about to kill herself. And he says, "Well, I wouldn't waste that lovely breast." And she goes, "Well, I'm married now." And he goes, "Did you say I do?"
"Oh, no. Sort of skip that part."
"Then you're not married."
I think she thinks she can't be with Wesley now because under God's eyes, she is now married to Prince Humperdinck, and that is eternal. She can't break that contract.
Just to swoop in here, too. In that moment where he goes, "Oh, don't ruin your perfect breast by killing yourself," that's another moment where Wesley just waits too long, just dramatically. He's just, she could have killed herself so easily. And then he comes in with a quick one-liner.
"Stop proving my first No Way right over and over again when you voted against it, you piece of shit."
Boo!
Boo! Rubbish!
Here's the other side of that, though. Suicide in this system is also, it is a damnable sin, so as divorce. So the question is here is, if she's willing to damn her soul through suicide, why is she not willing to damn her soul through divorce or abandonment?
Yeah, Daniel.
I mean, the only thing that I can think is that she thinks that she can't break, that Wesley won't want her anymore.
Oh, he said, don't ever doubt me.
She didn't know if marriage was under that umbrella. And she's also very, I will say this, this is one of my favorite scenes in Princess Bride. I think they're a bit impulsive. Remember when he falls down the hill and her response is just to hurl herself down a hill?
What have I done? Ow!
I don't think they're thinking three steps ahead here.
No.
You know, I think they're working.
I mean, that is the fastest way to get down a hill.
Absolutely. Yeah. Dead.
Yeah, why does she care? Why does she care about the marriage? Even if she did say I do. Why?
Yeah, have
care?
Some smooches, who then go cares? To hell. I mean, who cares?
Because it's a religious society and it's a medieval system. Yeah. And that was
I know, but,
the church.
But you just said, like, she's about to commit suicide. She's about to damn herself anyway.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know.
I think the combination of her not being, like, they don't think ahead too far, and she thinks that she's now lost Wesley forever under God's eyes through the wedding, and she can't get out of that marriage. I think she thinks that's her only course of action until Wesley exposes the loophole.
We are assuming here she has this opinion about the church, though. There is no evidence in the movie that she's religious.
Well, I should. We should. This is a real learning lesson here. A given of this world should have been the role of the church in medieval society. But in my opinion, that goes without saying. As far as I'm personally concerned, that goes without saying.
Yeah, I think at first I was like, yeah, no, this doesn't make any sense. Why? But Kayvon convinced me that she thinks she got married. And she was wrong, but she thinks that. And I get why she wants to kill herself now. Yeah, I get it.
Inconceivable. I'm going with Mike on the no way. Yeah.
I think that she feels trapped. I think she feels again that she's once again betrayed Wesley. She feels that Wesley's abandoned her because he didn't get through the door in time. I think she doesn't think many steps. I don't think either of these lovers think many steps in advance. They seem very impetuous and impulsive. And I think she thinks this is her path. That's what she has to do. I also think because of my first no way didn't work. I don't know how deep their true love really is.
I agree.
I don't buy it all entirely. So I think it's a way. I think she feels very trapped. I think she thinks she's lost her options. She thinks suicide is her choice. Way.
This movie's great. It's a way. It makes sense. Whatever.
Life finds a way.
The Princess Bride is a way. It stands.
Yes.
Daniel, that was really fun. God, I love talking about Princess Bride and talking to you. We've got one last segment to our program this evening. Markian, you got lead on this. Explain what's up.
Yeah, so this is coming to the end. It's called the Funometer, where we ask you on a scale of 1 to 100 on a score, how did you enjoy this movie coming back to it as an adult through the lens of your older self versus your younger self? I'm going to start off because I don't have a reference as a kid, so I have no nostalgia connected to this movie. So I'm just scoring this peer out of yesterday morning watching this movie for the first time after
actually,
lying about
Mark
it.
Ian, can I add something to yours? Because that's really interesting.
Okay,
can you
sure.
make your funometer based off how much hype was given to you to compare to your experience?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
This lived up to my expectations of it. I understand why everybody loves this movie so much. I'm going to give this one just a nice solid 82 on the enjoyment meter, my funometer.
I love this movie. It gets funnier every time. It's really quite a unique film in that way, in that I keep finding new little pieces, new little accents, new little ways they're saying something that I didn't catch the first time. So I'm going to give The Princess Bride 98%.
Wow, nice. Yeah, I mean, I'll just throw my number out right off the bat. I give it a 95 because I just have such a hard-on for, like, fantasy. And then when you add comedy to it, too, those are two things I love. Put them together, you just get, like, a silly but also still fantastical story. Like, I did love the fire pit segment. I liked when it became an adventure.
I love the whole film. Like I said, I watched it yesterday, and then I watched it again today. And I was like, oh, I might be kind of bored watching it again today. And it was even better watching it today than watching it yesterday. That's one of the best things about this movie is that it just gets better. Like Kayvon said, it just gets funnier and better the more you watch it. It's truly one of my favorite films. And it's more beautiful and funnier and more touching than I even remember it being. I don't know. 100. Stone cold 100.
Inconceivable.
Man, that was fun. If you guys ever want to do Robin Hood Men in Tights, let's do that.
We're putting it on the list. Thanks so much for spending this time with us and talking about this movie with us. We love you very much. And I want to get a tennis game with you this summer. So let's get that planned.
Yeah, let's do it. All of us. All four of us.
I'll watch.
Mike can watch.
I'd love to be the ball boy.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, dudes. This was fun. Now, this did happen once upon a time
when things were not so complex. Thank you for listening to this episode of the No Way podcast. No Way is produced by Markian Tarasiak, Kayvon Koshkam, and Mike Gill with the help of Speakeasy Theater and the Cinematics Creation Company. The show is edited by Kayvon Koshkam with original music by Ben Elliott. The No Way podcast is produced on the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. Please join us next week for another blockbuster episode of No Way. And be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at No Way Podcast and Twitter at No Way Pod. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time at the movies.
Love was stronger than the power so dark a prince could have within his keeping. His spells to weave and steal a heart within her breast but only sleeping. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. My love is like a story.